You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you.
I mean, my thinking is that an Irish work is work written by Irish writers. I mean, Irish writers can write about pretty much anything. In the same way that American writers can write about anything they want to write about, that they are American tells you that their engagement, their interest, and so on and so forth is eclectic and it's a broad range. And with these writers, they are writing out of their experience and the world that surrounds them. And I think what they demonstrate is that they are writing with specificity about their world and not necessarily in reaching for something universal. But in the process of doing that, they create work that resonates with us because we recognize the honesty and the immediacy of their concerns and their ideas. So like all national writing, the writing, we may say broad things about the themes that they deal with and the subjects that they deal with. But at heart, what we are seeing is people grappling with language and using language to express experience.
You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
She's Stacy Waite.
And he is Scott Winter. Welcome to episode 3 of Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Today we're hanging out at the kickoff event for Prairie Schooner's winter issue of Contemporary Irish Writing. The event at the Sheldon Gallery on the campus of the University of Breslin-Lincoln included readings by Irish writers Nulani Crohor, Dini Rowan Blank, Sandra Bunting, and Aidan Rooney.
And of course, there was a party, which you can hear behind us. We started the show with Prairie Schooner editor Kwame Das talking about Irish writers and Irish writing at that reception. Poet, novelist, and short fiction writer Nulani Crohor told me a joke, and I didn't get a good recording of it, but it kind of went like this. So to make this joke work, Stacy, every time I say something, you have to say pea green soup, okay?
Got it.
All right, what'd you have for breakfast?
Pea green soup.
What'd you have for lunch?
Pea green soup.
And what'd you have for dinner?
Pea green soup.
And then what'd you do?
Pea green soup.
All right.
So you can, yeah, you got me there.
So you can tell that Nulani Crohor has kids at home, so she had a clean joke. Aidan Rooney did not have a clean joke, so we won't share that here.
Rooney's from Monaghan in Western Ireland, a border town where he saw the violence of the 70s and 80s in his youth. He now teaches French and writes poems in a Boston suburb, but the poetry still comes from his home country.
Rooney picked out a few early poems to read at the Sheldon event from his first collection, Day Release, published in 2000.
Retro creation. Bungalows, God said, day one. And up they sprang like buttercups with lawns and railings, gate, three bedrooms off a hall, a phone that squats on the hall stand, back door, scullery, red formica countertops. Day two, God dollied in the stove and rigged the central heating. The oil man came and fired her up, but God saw that a cold feeling lingered. A call for back boilers, slack, arrowboard on the ceiling. Volkswagens, he said. Day three, to get people out to do a run round the relatives, Armagh for butter, day trips to Bundoran. And once a year, 2 weeks down south, Corktown, the Hinch, Ballybunion. Where he made, day four. Strand hotels, sandy beaches, buckets and spades, souvenir rock to strengthen teeth, a cliff walk, a straw hat, promenades, donkey rides, pitch and putt, a machine to roll pennies in arcades. And God saw that all this was good if thirsty work. So God made fondness, day five, and he put a pub in every street. Next he made Guinness, gin, vodka, minerals, then nightclubs to extend business till all hours of day six. Takeaways, coffee shops, supermarkets, 99s, crispy pancakes, tato, co-op milk, and custard yogurts. Squirty tomatoes. Organic courgettes, kiwis, kitchen gadgets. Day seven. Mass. He said by himself. And after that, the Sunday Tribune, again, mostly about himself. His enterprise, the good wine, all gone. His mangled talents rusting by slow rivers. His manna eaten. And all his marvels dead. His oceans rising, hell-bent to heaven.
Wow, we have pubs and God in the last couple of days. What does that poem do to you, Stacy?
Well, I think the first reaction is the right reaction, which is, I knew pubs were a gift from God. That's the first thing. But on a more serious note, I think the most moving thing about that poem is, if we thought of God as human like that, as making those human moves, I don't know, it strikes me that the poem's making a kind of argument that we might do more human things with religion or with God if we thought of God that way.
Well, that's pretty deep. I was just trying to picture God driving a Volkswagen. That's good stuff.
I liked when he rigged the heat, too. Right. I wish God would come over and rig my heat here in Nebraska.
Exactly. And a lot of Ian Rooney's poems got pretty serious, especially when he wrote about his history of growing up on the border near not far from Belfast. And he has an interesting take on things. But I think the coolest aspect about readings for me as a student writer professor is the after event, the reception afterwards, a chance to interact with those writers. We caught up with Sandra Bunting, a Canadian and Irish poet, who talked about her travels, her work in this issue of Prairie Schooner, and what Ireland means to her.
I'm Sandra Bunting, and I'm drinking Guinness. My piece is... One was called High Brazel, and it has to do with an Irish myth, maybe, or an Irish belief. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they can sort of ethereal. It's about a place that disappears and appears and disappears in the Atlantic Ocean. And I sort of put it together with when you're feeling pain, that it's something that emerges and subsides and emerges and subsides. Mm-hmm. I lived in Ireland. I went to school in Ireland first, and then I went back to Canada. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Spain and met an Irish man and married him. And I was 25 years in Ireland, and I've just left. Well, I moved to Galway in the west of Ireland, and I think the whole place with the sky and the water and the hills, they sort of permeate everything. Mm-hmm. They permeated my work. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to get settled into a certain kind of poet. I didn't want to be branded as a Galway poet or an mm-hmm. Irish poet. I have Irish citizenship, and Ireland means a lot to me. But I want to explore a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And The people that were brought up in Ireland find sort of the American version of Irish difficult to take. But I understand it more. And I think the people that left Ireland a long time ago, two or three generations, had, yes, they had a romanticized vision, but they knew there was magic there, and there is magic there. It's not in leprechauns or... it's just in the land and the people, their imagination.
Karen Babine is a graduate student at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln who spent some time studying in Galway. She's a senior reader for Prairie Schooner and served on a panel during the festivities at the Sheldon. Air Schooner production assistant Franny Sprouse sat down with Babine to talk about her Irish experience and her aptly titled essay, Galways.
She specializes in creative writing and spent close to a year studying in Ireland. So Karen, where did you stay in Ireland?
I was in Galway the first time, when I was a student. And the best way to figure out Irish geography is to mentally fold it in half from top to bottom. And Dublin is on the east coast, and Galway is on the west coast on the fold there. And so I was on the Atlantic and spent 6 months there as a student. I lived in student housing. My wonderful roommates were Irish, didn't know them before I got there. And that's where I was. The other two times I was back, I just traveled around and stayed in hostels and bed and breakfasts and those kinds of places. Galways. 1. Galway in winter, 2000. The Corrib River hurls itself against the wolf-toned bridge and through its stone arches on the final leg of its 4-mile journey from Loch Corrib to Galway Bay, and at this point, river hardly applies. The water has more than energy, more than life, more than a personality. In January, swelled by the winter rains, the Corrib River barely bears any remote connection to the sedate, nearly comatose thing it is during the summer. This is the way I like my river. Part of the river's volume is oxygen, the water whipped into rolling thunderations by Galway's winter gales and the force of trying to move that much water under the bridge. Even on those days, I'd like to sit on the stone benches of the Spanish Arch, facing the Claddagh on the other side of the river, hypnotized by the full-bodied tumbling of the water, like children turning somersaults on thick mats. The water, it lives. It breathes. I want to lose myself inside that frantic energy, to be so totally consumed by it that all my skin and bone is reduced to water. They tell tales of a woman named Galva, who drowned in this river, and in her memory the city of Galway is named. I do not want to lose myself like that, but the thought of being consumed by the energy of this river is something I can understand. But I can't sustain that energy if I tried, and I have tried. And when I do try to lose myself in the river, I find that afterwards I need to cross the bridge, follow the canal past the Claddagh, down the rocky strand of the Claddagh beach to Galway Bay. There is usually calm there, even on blustery days. Even though more water is involved in the whole of the bay, it can still never match the river that pours into it.
Those are waters I'd love to see and feel. What's your reaction to that essay?
I just keep thinking about that water like children turning somersaults. It's a remarkable image. So much is captured there, like a playfulness, the fragility, and perhaps even a little bit of the irreverent clumsiness of water and children. And so I've just been tossing that around since I heard it.
Americans all seem pulled to Ireland, and whenever I read or hear writing about Ireland, it just makes me want to go now. Like, I want to drop everything and go now.
Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. You can listen to all four parts of Karen Bapine's essay at prairieschooner.unl.edu, as well as see video of Aidan Rooney's poetry readings.
Prairie Schooner is going to AWP in Chicago. On Thursday, March the 1st, see Shane Book, Cara Candito, James Cruz, Greg Herbrick, and Marie L'Espérance read for Prairie Schooner's 10th Anniversary Book Prize Series reading. On Friday, March the 2nd, Book, Candito, and L'Espérance will sign books. Later that day, hear Glenna Lucia contribute to the panel under New Management, the Literary Journal in a Changing World.
Thank you for joining us on Air Schooner. Episode 4 will drop the week of Super Tuesday as the Republicans squabble over which one of them will run against President Barack Obama. We'll feature a show called Politics and the Writer, and if things work out for us, we'll be talking to writer Charlie Baxter and others about politics and writing.
We'll send you off with one more Aidan Rooney poem.
The curried chip and the forks. Driving home from a disco in Enniskillen, we stopped at a van in Achnacloy for a feed of curried chip. There's just one plastic fork supply, with each of the two silver dishes of steaming chips. And there's five of us. So you can imagine our hostility at the chipper's refusal to fork over some extras. Be a civil pal before we shoulder his greasy fuck of a van upside down, him inside, and let the hot fat sear his cheap ass. Serves him right, we told the RUC when they lit us with their dazzling light. A few free plastic fucking forks and we'd be home in Monaghan by now. He'll show more respect, the mean bastard, next time the likes of us darken his van. Feel free to scare me now.
Air Schooner is a biweekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Robert Fugli, Ted Wheeler, and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.